accept it or welcome it. You need not believe it. You need not accept it. You need not welcome it. Some of it's going to be hard to believe. Some of it's going to be startling to you. The Course in Miracles says you're not asked to judge the ideas, but it's the use of the ideas that gives the ideas meaning and shows you that they're true. It's amazing how much easier it is to hear something that you don't feel like you have to believe. If you feel like you have to believe something, then it tends to bring up resistance. Like you think I'm trying to convert you or whatever. But I'm not. I'm just trying to remember with some more people who hopefully want to remember. And so just take a breath just a second. If you use it, you'll see that it works. I want you to take this thought into this century. The thought is, there is nothing to fear. There is nothing to fear. There is nothing to fear. Breathe on that thought. There is nothing to fear. There is nothing to fear. If you're afraid about something right now, according to the Course, if you're afraid about something right now, it's because you're trusting in your own strength, separate from God. You believe that it's up to you, and you got to do it, and you have to figure out how to do it on your own. If you have some fear right now, wherever that fear area is, that's the area that you're trying to handle it alone. Because it's obvious that if you thought you were connected to a powerful, all-powerful, all-powerful creative force that could solve anything, we certainly wouldn't be afraid. There's nothing to fear. And sometimes it's hard to recognize it when you want your fear to be true. Whenever you're upset about something and you really want to believe it's just the way you say it is, then it's hard to recognize there's nothing to fear. So the Course says just to open your mind up a little bit every time you have a free moment. You just tell yourself there's nothing to fear as often as possible at any time, in any situation. You remind yourself there's nothing to fear. Say it slowly. There is nothing to fear. You may have some area in your life right now where you have some concern. You don't have to believe this to say this. You do not have to believe it to say it. So you can still say to yourself, no matter how you feel, there is nothing to fear. Should anything disturb your peace of mind, immediately go, there is nothing to fear. And whatever area you feel peace in and harmony in, that's an area of your life that you are in touch with the power of spirit within you. And so you have remembered God in that area. In that area, your energy is feeling safe. And you let the strength of your creator take the place of your weakness. And the instant you're willing to let the strength of God take the place of your weakness, there is indeed nothing to fear. There is 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 nothing to fear. There nothing to fear. There is 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 nothing to fear. The power of the spoken word, the power of affirming, the power of chanting something, the power of putting some rhythm behind something. It affects you. You remember it more than when you just, there is nothing to fear. There is nothing to fear. So that's a different energy. Well, if you want to get your feeling nature involved, I would invite you to try not to make your spiritual path an intellectual trip. Because it truly is, it's a path of the heart. It has nothing to do with intellectually feeling it out, you know. Yeah, it's so interesting how many people approach spirituality like they would trying to get a marketing degree. Right, it's like an academic kind of approach to God, you know, and I'm going to analyze it and I'm going to figure it out. And then when I get through figuring it out, I have it all together. And the Course says it's impossible to control the unknown. You really don't know. And that's really what's cool about the whole thing, is that it might not be the way we think it is a good thing. That it might be a little opposite from what we're being taught, told, programmed to believe might be a great thing. So I'm going to continue with the judgment of the Holy Spirit on page 215. The Course calls the Holy Spirit the right mind, the sane mind, and the ego is who we think we are. I'm going to read the first two paragraphs. I think they all you. The Holy Spirit is your sane mind, according to the Course, your correct mind, your the part of you that's in touch with God, and also the part of you that knows what you think is true and what you think is happening. And so the Course is, in this section is saying, well, this is how the loving mind would judge. The Holy Spirit's judgment is, how would a loving mind or a correct mind judge? So I'm going to read the first two paragraphs. We went over it last week, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the first two. I just want to do it to kind of help us get familiar. You've been told not to make error real. The way to not make error real is very simple. If you want to believe in error, you would have to make it real because the error isn't true. Truth is real in its own right, and so to believe in the truth, you do not have to do anything to believe in the truth. You do not have to do anything to believe in the truth. You do not have to do anything to believe in the truth. You don't have to do anything to believe in the truth, because it's true whether you believe it or not. So your belief doesn't make it true. Okay? If it's true regardless of what you believe about it. Your beliefs make your perception. Your beliefs don't make reality. Reality was there first. You know, so what we're making is our perception of everything. And then we are then perceiving and living in that bubble of perception. The Course says the reason why you know you're inside of a world of your own making is because nobody knows what's going on in it until you tell them. Because if it was something that was real, everybody would see it, just like everybody see this microphone, for an example. We all collectively pretty much say it's here. But what I think about this microphone, I have to tell you. So my beliefs and my thoughts are just my own personal world through which I look out and then see the witnesses to what I think. So that's why your perception cannot be used to prove or disprove anything except what you believe. Everybody with me on that?
Yeah.
Your perceptions are, your eyes are lovely liars that completely deceive you all the time because they just witness back to you what you already believe. First you look in and then you look out. First you look inside yourself, determine what you want to see, and then you see it out there. So if I look inside my mind and believe that I can't trust people and that people might hurt me, then I look out there and I see all the people that do and I attract them to me. I look in before I look out. Perception is a result. It's not a cause. So by the time you see something, you're just seeing the result of the way you're looking at things. So when you look at me, you're looking at a result. You're not looking at a cause.
Good.
All right? Okay. So then it says, well, you need to understand that you don't respond to anything directly, but you always respond to your interpretation of it. So you're not responding to this room and what's going on in it directly right now. You're responding to your interpretation of it. And then your interpretation of it is the justification that you use for how you're going to respond to it. That's how everybody does. First, the Course says, I'll say it one more time, you're not responding to anything. Like if you're thinking about something with your family, with your job, with the mate, with anything in your physical life right now that you're thinking about, you're not responding to it directly. You are responding to what you are telling yourself about it. People wonder where peace of mind comes from. What Spirit just told us in this book is the answer to how you have peace of mind. Did you know that? If the way you feel and respond is coming from the way you interpret things, then no matter what is happening, you can interpret it in a way that gives you peace. If it's the way I'm judging you that's making me feel the way I feel about you, then theoretically, I can feel good about you all the time by just being really clear about what I tell myself about you all the time. And if I tell you that you're cool all the time, better way, that's what I do. If I tell you that you're cool all the time, I feel good about you all the time, and that has nothing to do with what you're doing at all. I'm responding to my interpretation of you. You never have complete peace of mind by thinking your peace comes from how somebody else thinks or acts or behaves. Which is what Course calls the false plan of the world. That the world's plan is, I'm going to get everybody else to change around me, or I'm going to get this situation to change, and then when this situation changes, I really feel good. Because that's the false plan. And that is the plan of the world. So everybody's trying to manipulate everything and everybody in their experience so that they can have their particular fantasy acted out. And then we wonder where grievances come from when everybody's mad at everybody for not acting out their scripts. I'm sorry, I just happen to have a life myself. I don't know how I could be so selfish as to want to live mine instead of make mine what you want it to be. I know I'm selfish. Because that's what people tell you. You're selfish. What? You're so selfish you won't let me manipulate you. So that means if you analyze somebody else's motives, it's hazardous to you. I always like to give examples because they're so easy with the Course. If you try to analyze where I'm coming from right now, it's hazardous to you. You know why? Because if you decide that I'm trying to attack you or desert you or mislead you or enslave you, you're going to actually treat me and respond to me as if I've actually done that. See, if I come up to you and I interpret that you are being really unkind to me and that you don't like me, then that may not be what you think at all. She could really like me a lot. But I'm going to respond to her like she's the way I've made her up to be. So I decided you don't like me. You know what? I'm not going to speak to you. I'm going to treat you like you don't like me. See how that was hazardous to me? She was really a loving person. I judged she wasn't, so it actually cut me off from something that could have been cool for me. So judging everybody around you, that's hazardous to you because you might be missing something wonderful that you are telling yourself isn't that way. And then dealing with them
as if they're the way you think they are. So if I deal with her as if she's trying to hurt me, then she's going to respond to me as if I'm not such a nice person. So I actually created the reaction that I got from her, from something I made up about her that doesn't have anything to do with her. But we ought to all pray to each other for forgiveness right now. We ought to all just look around and everybody we know and go, would you just please forgive me? Because we know we work in that plan. We know we work in that plan. And that's what I like about the Course in Miracles. It says we can all have a universal experience, even though we won't all have a universal theology. We're not going to all believe the same way about stuff. It's ignorant to even make that an approach to changing the world. You know, it just ain't going to happen. You know what I'm saying? But, for an example, all of us are having a universal experience of breathing right now. Mm-hmm. You see what I mean? So through our universal experience, we work our way back to what's true. That's why you don't have to try to figure it out. You can let your experience be the way that you get back to what your beliefs are. So that you can change things, because many people say, well, I don't know what I believe. Yes, you do. What you believe is what you see. And what you believe is how you're interpreting what you see. So your thoughts are not hidden. Your beliefs are not hidden. They are your environment. They are your friends. They are everything around you. That's your consciousness. I used to say, oh Jesus, now I go, thank God, because the people around me are so cool and my experience is so loving that I'm going, well brother, you must be changing your mind because you're seeing more love in your life. But I can't be all cool and peaceful and loving and this really great person and everyone else sucks. And you'll see that a lot too, where people will look at it as if they got their act together, and if everybody would just be more like them, the world would be a better place. It's like, do you know how sad you are? And the average person that thinks that way is usually not a very fun person. I'm glad the world isn't like them. Why? Well, you know already they judge, and the only unconscious person would want everybody else to live according to their belief system anyway. You can't be awake and then try to limit the freedom of others. You have to be asleep to be that way. And to be asleep isn't to be sinful. It just means you're unaware. You live in a world that's made up of your thoughts. Nobody knows what's going on in it except you. And so you all day long talking to people that's not there. Because if you are dealing with me as if I'm something that you made up in your mind, then you're interacting with somebody that doesn't exist. And that's what people do all day long. And I'll add something else to it to make it even a little bit cuter. When you remember your experience with somebody from the past, do you know that the only thing that you are remembering is your reaction to them? That blew me away when the Course first said that, because I didn't think about that. That was something I took for granted. In other words, when I think about the person I was with last night, and I said I had a great time, and we had a great time together, all I'm really remembering is how I reacted to us being together. That person might be going, oh, please don't let me call me number. Oh, change my number to unlisted number. So you don't really know how everybody in your life has reacted to you. You just know how you feel about them. So isn't it amazing that we communicate at all, join at all, do anything with each other at all? Okay, let's go a little bit further. So when I interpret the error, I give the error power, and having done this, I'll overlook the truth. That's another easy one to go. I like to use people for example. If I see her a certain way that's not true, and then I start interpreting it what's not true, I'm giving it power. And since I'm giving it power, I'm going to overlook the truth, which is I really don't know what she's thinking. I didn't ask her. I overlook the truth, which is I'm making all this up in my own mind, because I'm so busy making my judgment true that I'm giving this mistake power. Now I'm getting mad about the fact that I think you don't like me. And then you say hi, and then I want to smack you upside the head. You don't even know what happened. You know what? That's what I've done this whole game in my mind. before I ever open. So then I walk up to you, right? And then I'm wondering why when I walk up to most people and I'm trying to get them to change and I'm upset with my mom, whatever, that I don't get the reaction that I want to get. You don't get the reaction because by the time you show up, you've so judged it in such a way that you know you're right, that you're not shooting out anything but negative, fearful energy, so you get it back. Kumbaya, kumbaya. There's nothing so obvious as the truth. The Course says we make up complexity as a smokescreen to hide the simplicity of things. So I know you want to make it, and maybe you don't, but I know sometimes people want to make it more complex than this. Because if you make it more complex, you have an excuse for not doing it. So I like that. Okay, now, first of all, he says, the analysis of ego motivation is very complicated, very obscuring, and never without your own ego involvement. The whole process represents a clear-cut attempt to demonstrate your own ability to understand what you perceive. So when you walk into the room, you're trying to demonstrate your own ability to understand what you see. Now, the fact that you're trying to prove to everybody that you understand what you see is shown by the fact that you react to your interpretations as if your interpretations were correct. I know what's going on, and so I'm reacting to my interpretations, and I think my interpretations are correct. And if I think you don't like me, this is what I'm going to do. I might control my reactions behaviorally. I might not act like I'm upset with you, but I'm not going to control my behavior emotionally. I might act like I like you, but I feel like I don't. So I'm controlling my behavior, but I'm not controlling my emotions. You with me on this?
Yeah.
So this is a split or an attack on the integrity of your mind.
Well, that's a thing.
That's a bit much for a Sunday afternoon, isn't it? So what does that mean? I'm pitting one level of myself against another level of myself. All day long, I'm feeling one way and behaving one way. I'm feeling one way and behaving another way. And I'm feeling one way and I'm behaving. That's what we do all day long. We feel one way and we behave another way. And he said, that's obvious conflict or attack on yourself. And then we wonder why we're so drained at the end of the day. Now, would you like to get past all of that?
Yeah.
Would you like to get past all of that?
Yeah.
Would you like to get past all of that?
Yeah.
Would you like to get past all of that? Okay, all right. I just have to ask your permission before I give it to you.
Okay. Give it to us.
There's but one interpretation of motivation that makes any sense. Just one. Because it's the Holy Spirit's judgment, because it's the higher mind's judgment, because it's God's judgment, it doesn't require any effort at all on your part.
Yeah.
I'll say it again. If I'm doing it for you, it doesn't represent any effort on your part.
Right.
You know, if you ask me for this and I give it to you, it didn't require any effort on her part, any physical effort. So when I give you something that's true, what's cool about it is it doesn't require any effort on your part. Okay. What the Course says it is simply this. Every loving thought is true. Everything else is an appeal for healing and help, regardless of the form it takes.
Wow.
There is but one interpretation of motivation that makes any sense. And because it's the Holy Spirit's judgment, it requires no effort at all on your part. Every loving thought is true. Everything else is an appeal for healing and help, regardless of the appearance it takes. Every loving thought is true. Everything else is an appeal for healing and help. Okay, so let's do our scenario over again. I walked in the room, I'm ready to judge her, because she didn't act the way I thought she should have toward me. We already established that her mind was on something else. So I'm interpreting her motivation and deciding that I don't like her, but not really noticing me. All right. But if I'm practicing that, the minute I feel what I'm making up to be a negative event, I would immediately go, either she's expressing love right now, or she's calling for help, or calling for God. See, rather than go, I think she really don't like me, with that making up, I'm the one that's giving it that interpretation because I'm trying to convince myself that I knew what was going on when I came in the room, so I'm going to respond to her as if my interpretation is true so I can think I'm an adult that knows something. That's the way adults do.
Yeah.
I'm an adult. I must know something. Okay, let me interpret what he's saying. Oh, well, it couldn't possibly be true because I'm an adult and I understand what I see and I'm going to now deal with him as if he's as crazy as I think he is. So I'm going to run out the room at 2 o'clock. Okay? And what you don't recognize is rejection is protection. 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 Rejection is protection and redirection. If someone is going, I'm redirecting you. That's what my rejection is. I'm going, you really want to be happy? You want to go another direction. isn't that cool?
Yeah.
So now when it looks like somebody rejects me, I always look at it like they somehow protected me and that was the best thing that could ever happen to me, that I did not enter into any kind of a connection or relationship with them. My ego, I've been rejected, let me get some therapy. Now, what can I do to make people like me? It's like, oh, you want to go in another direction? That's my protection. Okay, so the next time you're rejected in your perception, know that that's the universe trying to steer somebody away from you that's not beneficial to you right now. And that would change your whole mind about what you thought of as rejection. Because the Course says we got so much subconscious guilt that we don't even think we can have pleasure without paying for it with some kind of pain or guilt. So if you have a good time, the next day you got to start judging it. And you got to start trying to make something wrong with it. Because that's how you got to pay for what you did. Because we know when you suffer, it's okay to have some fun again. So one of the challenges that you're going to have to deal with as you begin to awaken and expand your awareness is you will start to have more good times. So if you've still got that old programming about punishing yourself every time you have a good time, you're going to be beating your butt more as you awaken the sort of thing that you what you're used to, because you'll be having more good times to punish yourself for. You understand what I'm saying? The Course is saying we operate from a lot of insane, unconscious belief systems that we're not even aware that we have. And it becomes so natural to us now that we don't even question it. We'll say stuff like, it's just natural to always have ups and downs in life. Why? Because we're surrounded by people who believe in ups and downs. So we all go up and down. So we think that's the only option there is. And the people who don't, they're not around us. So it looks like they don't even exist. But if you're a person who interprets the motivations of others and then deal with people as if they got to be the way you think they are, and then you have negative feelings about people and you want to see it as real rather than seeing it as a call for help, then you're going to live in a world full of people who do you the same way. You know, when somebody else makes a mistake, I want them to be hung from the highest tree. But if I do the same thing, please forgive me. When I do it, it's a mistake to be overlooked and people should have mercy on. When somebody else does it, I want the harshest punishment that can be done. And what you're doing is putting a sentence on yourself. You're saying out to the universe, look here, this is what I want, universe, and I know you respond to my deepest desires. I believe that when I make an error, I should have all kind of punishment come down on me, because I know that's the truth, because that's what I want to happen to everybody else that I think does anything I don't like. So universe, I want you to know, and you don't have to say this consciously, this is what's going on. I want you to give me what I want for everybody else.
Mm.
Now, if a person thought about that for a second, I bet you anything they'd have a different approach to how they relate to people.
Yeah.
If you were to go, this person asked me something, what I get ready to say to them is what I'm asking for and what's going to come to me. So let me think carefully before I answer you, because that's what's coming to me. Mm. So when you answer people, you should answer them more in terms of what you would want to come into your life, more than trying to figure out the best way to reach them. Because they're not going to hear you anyway, no matter what you say. They're going to hear their interpretation of what you said. So you can think you're just crystal freaking clear. and they totally misperceived everything you said. We've all had that experience where you thought you just couldn't make it any clearer than you made it. Oh, well, I know what that means. That means blah, 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 blah. You see, they brought in interpreted. So they didn't respond to what you said. They respond to what? Their interpretation of what you said based on what they wanted to believe about you in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
One thing when you do couples counseling sometimes, like I've done, is that you can tell within 5 minutes whether they want to be together or not, because the more solutions you give them, the more depressed they get. If they don't want to be together, when you tell them a way to be together, I swear you watch them. There's no energy, no enthusiasm. Because they were coming in with their justification of separation and the way that they could feel okay about separating by pointing out all the flaws they can blame on the other person. They finally felt some pseudo-innocence about leaving this joker because they had all these reasons why they should leave this person. And they come to you, they really just wrap it up in a neat bow because you're supposed to also say, my God, get away from each other. And then I throw a monkey wrench in the deal by saying, well, there's another way to look at this. Y'all could work it out. But if it's somebody that wants to be together, they're like, what can we do? Okay, yeah, if you want to get together soon, we're going to, okay, darling, we're going to, yeah, I want to do it. You always tell people who want to be around each other. You don't have to be psychic. Somebody, okay, it goes like this. If I really want, if I feel safe with you and I love you and I appreciate you, I'm coming toward you. Okay? If I'm not just about you, I'm going this way. Okay, you got to make me get with you.
Let
them
go.
It's hard to let somebody go when you think they're your last chance. This is the one who has all of my self-esteem wrapped up in them. This is the one that I have to have their approval for me to be okay. And then the part of you that doesn't love you is going to always choose the person that's not going to give it to you. You can count on it. That's why you're attracted to people who don't want you. It was the part of you that doesn't want to get what it wants that's attracted to them. If there's the part of you that don't want you to have what you want, then maybe you go after what's unavailable to you. It never was the part of you that wants you to have something that would ever make you go toward what you can't. Of course, there's little saying stuff like that. Isn't it maddening? Something that makes so much sense is maddening. And then if you know you're in something that's not really good for you, but you know you're staying in it anyway, even though you know you're not right now, you're... This is bothering me. Yeah, because the part of you that wants to hurt you, I am exposing it so they won't have that kind of power over you anymore. And that part of you doesn't like me doing that.
Keep it coming.
Thank you. That's why I teach, because it's impossible for me to forget what I'm reminding other people about. Because I need it as much as you do. I need it as much as you do. I need it as much as you do. Okay. I need it. I'm not perfect either. And the people say, well, I know you're not perfect. But sometimes when you're in this kind of role, people say that, but they still expect you to be whatever they think you're supposed to be as a spiritual person. So they come in with their spiritual interpretations. You think you're really spiritual. You know, you don't play Texas halls. If you're really spiritual, you don't say ass. If you're really spiritual, you have no sex nature. Everybody know, all ministers and teachers are supposed to be like nothing going on down there. It's all dedicated to God.
I'm not like that.
Take the pressure off of me, see. And I take it. I like to party. Sometimes I can see people introduce me to their friends sometimes. So, what do you know? This guy doing this spiritual stuff with. And then next minute, they see me. And it's like, they have a hard time bringing that together in their mind. Because they're interpreting what? And they're interpreting me. They are interpreting me according to their past learning of what they think spirituality means.
Right.
So they never interacted with me. They just interacted with their own thoughts about me. They don't even know me. So the Course is saying to us, please listen to this. This is what we are doing individually. All those things you think you know exactly what's going on and you're so sure it's the way, you're doing the same thing.
You've made some kind of a judgment and interpretation because you're trying to convince yourself you know what's going on. Then you deal with the person the way you think they are, which generates the reaction that you expected, and you don't see you created the whole thing.
We just go, I told you so.
I told you so. Oh, I love it. This book freed me so much. Really. Because you don't have to, if you could just take one page of the course and really get it, it would change your whole life. You don't have to worry about getting overwhelmed by how lost the rest of the book looks. So, what is the one interpretation of motivation that we should be learning to use? That whatever we see is either what?
Love
is all, it's a call for help for healing. Now, he says, now, if you're calling for help, can I be justified in coming back at you with a whole lot of anger? If what you're really doing is calling for help, then can anyone be justified in responding with anger to a brother's plea for help? If you're really just asking for my help, even though you might be saying, Earl, you're a low-down dog, I hate you. Okay, but I'm supposed to go, that's a deep call for help. Okay, unless I hate myself and I have some part of me that hates me, then when they say that, I'm going to react with defensiveness and attack because they're just reminding me of something that I already believe about myself so much that I get upset when they say it. What do you mean you hate me? What if I knew that I was loving and I was full of love? You could hate me all you wanted to, but it wouldn't change nothing about the way I felt about myself, so I wouldn't have to react to you as if what you just said had any kind of power. It would be more like, gosh, you call it for love. You know, I've been walking in the house one day, and one of my relatives was just going off. I mean, cussing everybody out. Just, you know how you just lose it sometimes, and you just gone, and you believe your interpretation is a fact, so now can't nobody tell you nothing, even though your misery ought to be a clue? In fact, if you're the one acting a damn fool, ought to be the clue. Well, everybody else is going, it might be you. So I walked in, of course, and I had been studying this a long time, and I walked up to the person and I just grabbed him and hugged him and said, hey, I love you, I love you, you're safe, everything's cool, I love you. No, I love you, brother. I love you. I know you just make me afraid about something, it's okay, you're safe. And then the person broke down in my arms and they cried and they would say, this is what's really going on with me, and they really went to that real thing. I didn't come in the house and then attack them for their call for help. Like I used to do in my old mind. Every time somebody else was upset, I'd just get as upset as they did and get right back upset at them. I didn't answer the call for love. Because that's all we really want is love. When I go to anything I go to, all I really want is a sense of connection and a sense of love. I'm not going there looking for specimens. I'm not going there looking to get anybody for myself. I'm not going there to try to control anybody or do anybody act out my fantasy. I'm just going there to give and receive love. I'm going there to see if there can be some kind of a real connection of joy and safety that happens in the experience. Then what you give out is what you attract back to you. And that's the way it works. I've been amazed at the power of a smile. It's amazing. Especially if you're sincere. Like if you really look at somebody and you really are happy to see them and you really smile.
What are you going to do? I'm happy to see you. What are you talking
about? See? But the average person, again, walks in like this and expects to have people say, let's go out to lunch. They don't see. Thank God for Mac.com.
Oh, yeah.
I love those sites. Those are like the lionest places in town. People like not telling each other the truth. You know, like I put up my high school paint picture. They work. To me, they're a beautiful thing. If you tell the truth, I think it's great. I think it saves time. This is what I like. This is what I'm about. Uh-huh. You know, you like the same thing. Let's get together. Let's see. To me, that's a lot better than hoping I walk up to her and hope she'll be okay about seeing me. But I used to like some kind of way, like kind of ridicule that back when I was interpreting motivations like that.
So you could go to a website to try to get somebody.
Well, the way you've been trying, has that been working for you? How's that been working for you? Your little plan, how's the plan going?
The court says we think if we do the wrong thing a certain number of times, it'll turn right. like you can do what doesn't work 102 times, but on the 103rd time of doing the same thing that hasn't worked, somehow this time is going to work for you. You got a different person this time, so even though it's the wrong plan, you're still going to get a different result because, you know what I'm saying, it's like using the same cake mix for a recipe, but think I'm going to get a different kind of cake because I use a different kind of pan. You can't get a different kind of cake because you do a different kind of pan when you give them the same recipe that you've been giving all the other 102 relationships you had before that. Oh, it just says stuff like this. It makes so much sense. It just drives me insane. It drives me sane. Yeah, this book drives me sane. So, why would we want to do that? Well, the court says, no response can be appropriate except the willingness to give the help to the person, and this and only this is what they're asking for, which is the help. Offer the person anything else other than seeing it as a call for help, and you are assuming the right to attack their reality by interpreting it as you see fit. Perhaps the danger of this to your own mind is not yet truly apparent. If you believe that an appeal for help is something else, you will react to the something else. Your response will therefore be inappropriate to the reality as it is. It's a call for help, but not your interpretation of your perception of it. Now, what did all of that just say? It says the only response is justified is for me to respond to and her trying to answer or either see what she's doing as a call for love. That if I don't want to do that, it's because I want to believe what I believe about her more than I want to believe the truth of the situation. Sometimes you want to believe what you believe about a person more than you want to believe the truth about that person. So I'm no longer responding to her call for help. I'm responding to something else, which is my interpretation of what's going on. So that's what the course is saying. We have two choices. I can either see it as a call for help, or I can see it the way I see it. That's all. Like when you walk in here, you either can see me the way you see me, or you can see me as a call for help, or you can see me as a loving person. Those are your two choices. The way you see me, or the way the situation really is, because God's judgment of me is that I'm loved, or either I'm calling for love, or I'm calling for help. That's it. That's universal mind's perception of what's going on. But if I want to see it as being something else, then I'll respond to the way I want to see it. That's what they're saying. And if you look back now and you read it, you see that that's exactly what it said with just what I just said. Which meant you really knew what it was saying when you read it the first time, but you just wasn't ready to accept it yet. There is nothing to prevent you from recognizing all calls for help is exactly what they are, except your own imagined need to kick their butt. To a cat. In other words, why won't I see what you're doing as a call for help? Well, because I really need to attack you, and I really need to let you know how upset I am, and I really need to let you know how angry I am. So my need to attack you and be mad at you is greater than my need to see you as calling for my love and calling for my help through the way that you're responding and behaving. I'd rather be mad at you than see that you're calling for my love and help. You've got to follow that one. What is it that keeps me from doing this? Why did I get really thrilled about seeing everybody's stuff as a call for love? Because I have an imagined need to see it as something else. And the way I want to see you means more to me than the way the Spirit is telling me to see you. I want to attack you. You hurt me, and I'm going to get you back. I don't want to see that as a call for help, because then it wouldn't make no sense for me to attack you. That's really cruel. You just, oh, help me. Pow! You know, that doesn't seem really nice. But if it looks like you're attacking me, I can shoot you and feel good about it. Because you were attacking me. You weren't calling for my help. Now, are you saying that when a person's really trying to physically attack me, that I just say it's just a call for help and just let them attack me? Yeah, if you're a fool. Because if it's really, if you're going to do what you're going to do in that moment, you're not going to stop and think, what did Court say on page 215? You're going to do whatever your level of consciousness is. When you're in a situation that's really upsetting to you, you are not going to go conscious. You're going to go what you programmed. So if you were to be in a state of consciousness, and I've seen this happen,
where something looked like it was very violent about to happen to you, but you really were in a state of consciousness that you had nurtured that this was love or a call for love, it would diffuse the situation and you would not be harmed. If you were really there. Now, if you're just talking there, but you're not really there, well, I hope you got insurance. But you will kind of know whether you're there by how much you practice the truth in much less extreme situations. If I can't see somebody taking my parking place as a call for love, I know doggone well I'm not on the level of conscience that I see somebody trying to rob me as a call for love. You see what I mean? So you don't have to fool yourself about where you are or where you're going to come from when some emergency situation comes. That's why it doesn't usually help people who never have any kind of spiritual focus or focus on the truth that when they go over a cliff on the car, they say, "Help me, God, nothing don't usually happen." Yeah, that's the only time they call on God in the last 30 years. I doubt if their mind is strong enough to save them at that moment. And that's what happens. In an emergency, in a horrible situation, in some kind of a real, really, really pressure-filled situation, God. But you just give me one little break where nothing's happening, and my spiritual focus, my awakening focus, is way in the background of priority until my next disaster. Then all of a sudden, I'm God. Now, you're not going to be punished for that. You just won't get the results you want. That's all. So I'm not trying to say anything frightening. I'm just saying, don't expect to get a result of something you've never invested in just because you think you need it because you're in an emergency. Mm-hmm. So I would fill my tank up, me driving down the highway, saying I deserve to have gas when it's gone just don't produce any. You know what I'm saying? I have to be filling the tank up all the time. You have to fill the tank up all the time. But if you don't do it joyfully, you're going to think it's a sacrifice, and then you won't enjoy your spiritual path and get a chance to have all the fun and enlightenment and prosperity that goes with it. It's not a dull thing to follow your spiritual path. Actually, it creates more excitement in your life that you can have peacefully. If your spiritual path is dull, you might want to think about chunking it. You know what I'm saying? If your spiritual path isn't making your life easier, more harmonious, things kind of work out more for you, there's a little bit less strain every day, you might want to check out whether or not you want to continue on that particular path. Not that there's something wrong with that path. You're not working it.
Girl,
yes.
There was a bumper sticker this morning in Boulder that said, "Drill the well before you get thirsty."
Yeah, exactly. And what's really incredible is to recognize that everything that we're seeking is already in us and it's already there. That there's nothing you're trying to put in you that's not already there. The love is already there. You know, the safety is already there. It's already there. It's just covered up with these interpretations that we're using to create our lives. Everything you're seeking for, it's not somewhere you got to go get it and put it in you. You're already strong. You're already powerful. You're already loved. You're already connected. You're already free. You're already forgiven. You're already cool. Your interpretation said, "No, I'm not." My interpretation says, "I'm not enough because of what happened to me and my dad when I was 10 years old, and then he didn't really take me to the fair, and I'm messed up now, and I haven't been able to have a relationship." So I'm busy listening to my interpretation that has nothing to do with the truth of who is the person that's having the interpretation right now. Well, that's me. Well, that's to you, that's okay. You can let go of interpretation and you are not the same thing. You are having the interpretation. Well, who is the you that's having the interpretation? Well, that's the you that's outside of the interpretation. That's why I have to look back at it and say, "You know, I just did something real stupid." Well, who was that that could say you just did something that was real stupid unless there's another part of you that's outside of that that's witnessing that, and that part of you that's witnessing what you're doing, that's the part you want to get in touch with because that's the part of you that knows you're innocent and has never been affected by your story.
Wow. Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And you know that that's true, but it's about who are you going to invest in? The presence that's the witness, or are you going to still keep being your story for the rest of your life?
Mm-hmm.
And I say you deserve to be that presence and that power that you are. Mm-hmm. Now, because it's already there. Thank you for listening to this much with me, Holy Spirit. Can we acknowledge ourselves?
You know, for letting it in.
So, this week is going to be a challenge in that, and this is very important. It's saying, see it as a call for help, a call for love.
Notice that I didn't say do anything. I said see it as a call for help, a call for love. And then see what happens after you do that. Because after you do that, you'll get the intuitive hit about what to do. Whether it's something for you to do, something for you not to do. But so don't look like I'm telling you to go out here today and no matter what somebody's doing, you got to come up and give them some help. We're at the point that we're just learning how to see it as a call for help. And you can see it that way no matter how you're emotionally responding to it. And that will begin to create a space for a miracle to come through in your life. Because what we're doing is we're punching holes in our perception so that what's on the other side that's real can finally get through to us.
Yeah.
And every time we study some truth, it's like punching another hole in my illusion about myself so that something real can come into my life. That's what we're about. That's what we're about. So I'm going to do the love offering. Thank you for sharing with me. I'm a full-time teacher of the course on a donation basis, and that's so that people can come regardless of their financial situation. So thank you for sharing with me.
Thank you for sharing with us.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. The movie is this afternoon at 2:30. Conversations with God.
Yes, I'm the little God child of the little yellow God bus comes to me, brother. And I come and get a little short bus for the God child. How long are you trying to learn it's a call for love? 3 million lives. I'm up to the pocket space now. We're hilarious when you really think about it, you know what I'm saying? I'm so glad that more people didn't fall in love with me. Because I was so crazy, it wouldn't have been fair to them. So I'm glad there isn't so many people that I have to look back on and hope they can forgive me. Because the more you wake up, the more you realize it's not you need to be forgiven. You need to be asking for it. Because you realize how many incredible people crossed your path that were loving you unconditionally when you didn't know what was going on and was attacking and blaming everything.
Yeah.
And they was like dealing with your stuff day in and day out when you were totally obsessed with yourself and your fantasies and your, you know what I'm saying? It's like as I wake up, I realize, wow, I really wasn't a walk in the park. Because your own image of yourself is like, you know, I know I was together, you know. And all of a sudden you realize, my God, I was so unconscious, it was ridiculous. There is no such thing as unconditional love. Because I've had it many, many times. And just that one little thought about appreciation. That's just that one little word, gratitude. It goes so far. I mean, to just look at somebody and sincerely say, I really appreciate you and what you've done and who you are, no matter what it is. And you make sure they hear you say thank you. I really appreciate it. That was so good. You're so wonderful. You'd be amazed because the Course says, you know, if you want to keep something in your experience, all you have to do is appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't appreciate something, it's only going to be a matter of time before it leaves you, but you're going to project as if it was taken from you.
Mm-hmm.
And it says that the only thing that can be taken from you is something you didn't really want, but you didn't know it because you weren't appreciating it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh my God, it's playing so much. So sometimes you got to take your time, and you got to take your time and do it right. So I want to drill in that idea that it's a call, it's either love or a call for love for a minute. So whatever comes up, you'll be able to say that. So just let me work it for a second. And if you want to close your eyes, that's fine. But I just want you to focus on the words, and so that when we walk out, we have that thought in mind.
Yeah.
There is one interpretation of motivation that makes sense. There is just one interpretation of motivation that makes sense. That makes sense. There is one interpretation of motivation that makes sense. And because it's the Holy Spirit's judgment, because it's your right mind's judgment, because it's your spirit's judgment, it requires no effort at all on your part. The right answer requires no effort at all on your part. The right answer requires no effort on your part. Every loving thought is true. And everything else is a call for help.
every loving thought is true. Everything else is a call for help. Every thought is true.
Oh, yeah.
And everything else is a call for help.
For one-on-one.